This week on the show, Adam Jones of 98.5 The Sports Hub will join us to break down all the crazy Celtics trade rumors from over the weekend, plus his colleague Jim Murray on the Red Sox successful trip to Houston. We'll also take a look at what's going on with that NHL expansion draft. Heck of a U.S. Open this weekend as well. All of that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, the show we couldn't wait to get to here, June 19th. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz from our studios in Wellesley, Massachusetts. We're recording this at 1:50 on Monday, so the trade has just gone through. The Celtics will send the number one overall pick to the Philadelphia 76ers for pick number three and a few heavily protected first-round picks. To help us break it all down, from 98.5 The Sports Hub, Adam Jones, host of The Adam Jones Show. Adam, thanks for coming on.
Hey, what's going on, Alex? Thanks for having me.
So I guess because this just came out, this timing works perfectly. Your knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I think the added protection here that's gone on from the Celtics, that, you know, they're going to potentially get the higher of the two picks in 2019, doesn't make much of a difference to me. You know, we're talking about the number one overall pick in the draft. We're talking about what should be the best player in the draft, pick of the litter at the top of the board, franchise-altering type of move. And instead, Danny Ainge decides to move back down to number three. Maybe he'll keep on moving down. I have no idea. And now he's gotten one additional draft pick, which, great. Another draft pick I wouldn't say can hurt. But at the same time, how many more draft picks do you need? If the idea is targeting an all-star that's out there, I think they already have enough capital to do that. If the idea is to target a free agent, or all-star rather, who may not be available quite yet somewhere down the line, like Anthony Davis, then I think they're going to have to wait a while. And while they're waiting, I would have liked to have seen them take the best guy on the board, who I think, not just myself, but most feel is Markelle Fultz out of Washington. There's a reason Philadelphia is willing to move up the board to go get him and target him and have him lead their franchise. And I wish the Celtics were going to be getting him on Thursday night.
So do you not have confidence in Danny Ainge's ability to kind of evaluate talent? It's clear he doesn't think Markelle Fultz is the guy. That's why he's moving down. So do you think Danny Ainge is right in doing that? Do you think Markelle Fultz isn't the guy?
No, I think Fultz is the guy. So do I have faith in Danny Ainge doing it? I don't know. I mean, I think Danny Ainge is a really good GM overall. I think his trades, and this is a trade, I think his trades are really, really good, borderline impeccable. I don't love his draft record. I think it's overrated. And unfortunately, a big piece of this trade as of right now our draft picks. So the evaluation at the top of the draft is on Danny. And while he's had some nice picks over the years, for sure, and he has not drafted at the top of the draft a lot, at least until recently, Marcus Smart, jury remains out. I'm not a big fan of that pick. Jaylen Brown, jury remains out. I was not a huge fan of that pick either. So we'll see on both of those guys. But I don't know. Do you like Kelly Olynyk in the lottery? Do you like Marcus Banks in the lottery? Do you like Jared Sullinger and Fab Mello in the 20s? Do you like J.R. Giddens at 30? Like, I'm not saying those are all easy slam dunk picks, especially once you get to Giddens a year after coming off a championship, but I trust Danny Ainge much more to put these draft picks together and make a trade, and maybe that's the end game. If and when we get there, I'll evaluate that. But right now, if the idea is for Danny to be on the board and make the right pick, I'd rather have him picking at one, where there's a historical likelihood you're going to hit on that pick, or at least it's much more likely you hit at one than you do at number three. And I just, again, I don't love Danny's draft track record. I think he does a good job getting solid players here and there, but he's drafted one all-star since he's been the GM for a decade plus, and that was Rajon Rondo. Really, really good pick at 21, but he hasn't really hit the ceiling, and these need to hit their ceiling.
Now, how about the protections? This is what interests me. The Lakers pick protected 2 through 5, and that seems, you know, standard operating procedure. But the Kings pick and the Philly pick the right to swap 2 years from now. The one that stood out to me, and Chris Forsberg had this, it's the one sentence that to me has ruined this trade. Yes, they get the better pick unless the better pick is one overall, in which case they get the worst pick. Danny didn't choose to put the protection off another year. 2 years from now, it has to be safe to assume in this Eastern Conference the Sixers could be a playoff team. How much should we be looking that much at that, or is it too obscure a happening to worry about?
Well, I mean, I just don't like that you can't hit on number one. I mean, obviously you can with the Brooklyn pick next year. I was going through and reacting to this trade. I'm like an idiot. I had forgotten about the Brooklyn pick.
I think we all have in this.
So honestly, look, you can still be number one next year, right?
Right.
But when you're talking about that Lakers or Kings pick, or I guess potentially the Philly pick, and I'm with you. I think Philly's going to be pretty good in a couple of years, but look, Fultz had injury issues at Washington. Simmons hasn't played a game yet because of injury, and we all know the deal with Joel Embiid. So I like their talent, but can they stay healthy, I think, is a fair question. I needed more than one asset to move down a couple of spots. I needed more than one pick. I wanted the Lakers pick / Kings pick / I guess Philly pick, whatever it turns into, plus another future pick. I wanted both of those picks, meaning the Lakers and Kings, or another Philly pick or Dario. So I wanted something, you know, on top of moving down a couple of spots. And to me, I just don't think this is enough. Then you add in that it can't even be number one overall in this trade. And it's just, you went from being guaranteed number one prior to this trade to the assets you're getting are guaranteed they can't be number one. I mean, that to me is just, it's another reason to say it's not enough. Even if it could have hit at number one, it's still not enough for me. And the protections are just an extra piece of, I don't know, agitation.
And we're talking to Adam Jones of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Adam, you mentioned the possibility of Danny Ainge using these assets to get a big name. Who do you have in mind? Who do you think the Celtics should pursue with those assets?
Well, I think the guy they should pursue is the guy that we all want them to pursue, Anthony Davis. But I just can't picture him being available anytime soon from New Orleans. They control him for two more years until he's going into his final year, when you'd have to imagine they'd really start wanting to shop him. So I think you're a good year and a half to 2 years away from when New Orleans should consider moving him. Now, look, they're a bad organization, poorly run, all kinds of questions with ownership and Tom Benson, if you want to get into that. So maybe they're just a bad organization and they're dumb and they'll make a panic move. Maybe. I don't get why you'd be moving a 24-year-old stud, already a four-time All-Star, maybe a top five player in the league, certainly a top 10 player in the league. If you're going to rebuild, that seems like the kind of guy you want to rebuild around. And I get it. If you can get a treasure trove of draft picks, maybe you do that. But I think we're all sitting here saying, all right, give up four first-round picks. Give up five first-round picks for Anthony Davis. And the fact that we're all saying we'd do that probably tells you that New Orleans wouldn't want to do that, at least until they know they're going to lose Anthony Davis in a couple of years. So I think that's the guy you target. I just don't know how realistic that is. So if we're talking about more realistic options, there's been a lot of smoke around Jimmy Butler. I still think that's the guy they're going to be pursuing.
How do you feel about that? I'm personally not a huge fan of Butler. If this was all just to get him, and let's be honest, not probably just adding him, not enough to make a difference with Cleveland or Golden State, would you rather have Fultz at that point?
No. I mean, I would rather have Butler than Fultz in a vacuum. I mean, I'd like to go in next year. Butler's under control for, what, two more years, I think, at a reasonable team contract. I think he has an option after that, which he probably won't sign since he's underpaid. Or won't, you know, pick up since he's underpaid. I would rather have Butler on this team, especially if you're talking about bringing in, I don't know, Gordon Hayward. So if you're just asking me which player I would rather have, I mean, look, I like Jimmy Butler a lot. I'm not sure I would have traded number one overall just because of the control you get with Markelle Fultz and how long you can have him for and the cost certainty and everything. But Jimmy Butler on this team with a free agent, Hayward, Griffin, someone like that, you're really talking about competing in the Eastern Conference. So the only thing that would bother me about that is I think they already had enough assets to get Jimmy Butler. I don't think you needed to give up on the number one pick to get Jimmy Butler. I think you could have had Fultz and Butler. I mean, that's kind of what would annoy me about that aspect of it. They have plenty of assets to go get Butler. I think the reason that they're really collecting and building and sitting on this pile of assets is because they're thinking bigger. And I just don't know when they're going to be able to pounce, whether it is Westbrook or Davis or someone like that, some of the big names that I know Wojnarowski threw out there. We're talking a couple of years down the line, and that's just, it's a lot of sitting around and waiting for an organization that had the number one pick.
Again, we're talking with Adam Jones of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Adam, the guy who kind of has been quiet throughout all this to me, the rumors going back to Friday night, is Brad Stevens, the head coach of the Celtics. Now, we all heard the rumors about him leaving for Indiana, this and that. Look, I'm not going to be Sam Eakin, who says Brad Stevens is getting fired every time the Celtics do something. but I will say this. At a certain point, he's got these great offers. There are great opportunities out there. He obviously passed on Indiana, a job he would have really liked, but there are good opportunities out there. He is a hot commodity. at what point does he look at this, what Danny Ainge has been doing, and say, well, I'm sick of waiting. I want us to make a move and be aggressive already. How should he feel about the Celtics making this trade?
I got to be honest. I mean, I don't get the sense that Brad is antsy or panicking or anything like that, or really even pushing for them to go all in. I get the sense that he's content with the direction of the organization. And if it takes a while, that's fine. I mean, and I could be way off on that. That's the sense that I get. I mean, I think he's on board. I think he has a decent amount of pull in the room when they're on the clock. He may have a decent amount of influence on why they're not taking Markel Fultz, for all I know. So, you know, I'm not telling you he's sitting here calling the shots on trades. That's Danny. But I think Brad has a lot of pull. I think he has a lot of say in the overall direction of this franchise. And I do think he's on board with it. And just now that the Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Finals, they're the number one seed. They might be signing his guy, Gordon Hayward, this offseason. I think he's content to compete in the meantime and, you know, try to win the Eastern Conference, try to knock off Cleveland. Maybe if you get to the NBA Finals, try to win a game against Golden State or something like that. I don't know. I think he's in it for the long haul, and I don't sense any antsiness on his part.
So, assuming that the Celtics keep this number three pick and they pick a Josh Jackson or a Jason Tatum, they're probably going to go with a shooting guard or small forward. How will that affect the Celtics offseason moving forward?
So I still think they'll pursue Hayward, right? So I think they'll still go after Hayward, but then if they sign him, now you're really talking about, I think, other teams sitting there and being able to hold a gun to Danny Ainge's head and say, okay, you have Hayward, you have Jackson, you have Brown or Tatum, or Jackson or Tatum, you have Brown, you have Crowder, you have Smart, you have Bradley. All these guys overlap in some way, shape, or form, right? Call them all wings, even if Bradley skews more towards, you know, guarding point guards than he does small forwards. Let's just say that, you know, all those guys are going to be vying for time, and they will be. If I'm another team out there, now I have leverage in talks with Danny Ainge. There's no way he can keep that many bodies on the team. So at that point, Blake Griffin may be a better fit. When you talk about what they have available to them, remember, trading down just a couple of spots does give them more leeway under the cap to bring in a max free agent, whether it's Hayward or Griffin. So maybe it bumps them a little bit more in that direction. I think Hayward's their guy, and I think that's partially Brad Stevens. I think it's partially because of what this team needs and what they've lacked over the last couple of years. So I'd imagine Danny's already had conversations. He knows the value of Smart. He knows the value of Bradley. He knows the value of Crowder. Maybe even Jaylen Brown is a name he'd be willing to move on from after a year. And I think he has, if not trades lined up ready to go, he probably has an idea of the framework and what it would take to flip those guys. I just wonder if those other teams ask for a little more or want to throw in a little bit less once they know that Danny Ainge has, let's call it a glut or a logjam at that wing position.
Do you think we see another trade before the draft?
I guess I'm going to say yes to this, honestly, because it doesn't make sense to me to just move down and get another pick in the future and wait this thing out. Now, maybe their end game is a free agent. Maybe they really do have Jackson and Fultz as 1A and 1B. I think they'd be one of the few front offices that have that, but whatever. If they do, they thought it was good value to get another asset, so go for it. I just think there has to be another shoe to drop. Maybe that's wishful thinking on my part. Maybe that's just what I'm hoping for, but whether it is moving back for Danny Ainge in the draft, which I would hate, whether it is flipping assets to get a stud all-star, Butler, maybe even Paul George, though that seems far-fetched with everything we're hearing. Maybe there's another name out there that we're not talking about enough, Porzingis or someone like that. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I do think something else now happens between now and Thursday, or even now and on draft night.
Well, when we get to Thursday, too, I guess the discussion now has to be had, and we've been having this discussion here in Boston for a couple days now that it's official. You mentioned Josh Jackson's name a couple times, Jason Tatum. Jonathan Isaac is a guy who's really been building momentum. Where do you see the Celtics going at three?
It seems like Jackson, right? I mean, Chad Ford said that they were considering him number one, or he spoke to a source in the league that said they were considering him number one. They love him. He's a Celtics kind of guy. I think now that, you know, we're having some time to dissect the trade, I think it's fair to dig a little bit more into Jackson's past. Let's remember, he was suspended for the Big 12 tournament last year, which Kansas lost that first game, so he didn't help his team. He was suspended for the first game of the Big 12 tournament because he threatened to beat up a girl outside a bar. He did $3,000 worth of damage to a car, kicking in a car door. So I'd want to be comfortable with him off the court if we're talking about Josh Jackson. I like him as a player. I don't like him anywhere near as much as Fultz. I do like him more than Tatum. My guess is he has to be the guy if they're staying at three. But as I said earlier, I think there's a chance that maybe they're moving down. Maybe they're trying to collect more assets. Maybe there's a guy deeper down in the draft they like. Tatum could be one of those guys. I don't get a great read on where he's going to go. You know, you read that some teams love him at three. Other mock drafts, you see he might be falling to five, six, seven, somewhere in that range. I'm not as big of a fan of his. I actually compare him a lot to a guy who went to Duke prior to him, Jabari Parker, who I think you're talking about a polished professional scorer. I don't think you're talking about a great athlete. I'm not sure you're talking about a great shooter. And I would have some reservations about Tatum compared to the other top guys in the draft. I like him, but just compared to the other top guys in the draft, I would have some reservations. So my guess is Jackson's the guy at three. If they're moving down, I really don't know who they're targeting. If you're talking about trading with Phoenix at four or Sacramento at 5 and 10, something like that, I think Jackson's got to be the guy if they stay, though.
5-10 and Willie Cauley-Stein, right? Now, you mentioned that they're waiting to see what happens with Jackson. They're now involved in this logjam, really, behind the Lakers at two and Lonzo Ball, and whether the Lakers will take him or not. And that seems to be the question nobody can get an answer to, is what the Lakers are going to do at the second spot.
I think that's what they're going to do. Chad Ford put out his latest mock draft on Monday, and it basically said in the last 48 hours, they're warming up to the Lonzo Ball idea. Maybe they were trying to throw people off the scent because they wanted to attempt to move up to the number one pick, as has been reported, because they liked Markel Fultz. That's not going to happen. Philly's going to take Fultz one. So now you got to wonder. I think they're locked into Lonzo Ball at two. It doesn't mean they have to take him, but I just can't imagine the Lakers and Magic Johnson specifically being okay with Lonzo Ball going somewhere else and, you know, flat out dominating for another team. And now their first move is they passed on a guy who was right in their backyard and has probably the most star potential out of anyone in this draft outside of Markel Fultz. I can't see them passing on him.
So Ainge still has to, you know, he has to understand that the guy that they have number one, it's obviously not Fultz. He might get chosen. That Josh Jackson might get chosen at number two. Does this mean that he has two guys ahead of Fultz that he'd rather draft? Is it, 'cause if you're willing to move back two spots, you have to be open to that possibility.
So that surprised me. And I said this a lot on Friday, and I was wrong. I did not think anything would happen until Thursday night. I just thought Danny Ainge would not make this move until he knew his guy was on the board at three. So it tells you either he's got a couple of guys higher than Fultz, as you mentioned, or he's got all these guys at the top bunched up. Something along those lines. I mean, maybe he has a board that is flatter at the top. You know, you read a lot of people, Bobby Marks, you read John Givony over at Draft Express. Chris Mannix, you know, had a lot of these references in his piece at the Vertical last night. Or on Sunday night, rather. So, you know, I think a lot of people feel that there's a big gap or a relatively big gap between Fultz and the other players. Maybe Danny says, hey, Fultz, Tatum, Jackson, Ball, we like all of them. If we're in the top four, we'll just take whoever's there. And, you know, maybe we have a slight gradation, a slight difference between the players, but we have them all relatively locked up. And I think he's ready for the idea that that, you know, Jackson may not be there at three. I will say another interesting piece from that Chad Ford mock is he mentioned that the Celtics do like Lonzo Ball. And that one, to me, I don't know what that means for Isaiah long term. You know, if they're bringing in Lonzo Ball, I don't think he and Isaiah can coexist. I think Isaiah and Fultz could have coexisted. I don't think Ball and Isaiah, I don't think that's going to work. So if they're taking Lonzo Ball at three, which is a scenario that hasn't really been discussed a lot, then I don't know what that means for Isaiah long term, but I don't think it's a good one.
Would LeVar even let him sign in Boston? One more for you, Adam, before we let you go here, just to follow up on that point. Which do you think is more likely, that Danny Ainge did in fact, like Alex just said, have two guys ahead of Markel Fultz on his board, or is it possible that he has some source somewhere telling him not to worry about Jackson going to the Lakers, that he will be on the board at three?
I think he's pretty confident in that second thing. I think he's pretty confident that Jackson's going to be there at number three. Now, look, what he can't forecast is, do the Lakers look at it and say, well, we're not really sure what the Celtics are going to do at three, but we think there's a good chance we could flip with, say, Phoenix. You know, Phoenix is sitting there at four. Ryan McDonough used to work with Danny Ainge. He's the assistant GM here in Boston. McDonough knows how Ainge thinks. I wonder if they evaluate players similarly, or you know, value the same sort of skill set in some of these players. And if you think that Josh Jackson is a Danny Ainge guy, you could assume that Ryan McDonough would also like Josh Jackson. The one thing Danny can't plan for, I don't think, is if he's going to get leapfrogged. You know, if a team like Phoenix is going to move up the board and the Lakers would trade back, I think he has a good idea that the Lakers are taking Ball, or he has good intel on what the Lakers are going to do. That other wild card, though, that a team could trade in and get above them, I think there's some danger in that. But my guess is he's pretty confident Jackson, who feels like he's their guy. I think he's pretty confident Jackson's going to be there.
Adam Jones, thank you very much. You can follow him on Twitter at AdamJones985. Hear him from 7 to midnight on 98.5 The Sports Hub, including Thursday night. You'll be live at the Garden, right? You and Nick Cattles for the draft?
We will be live for our always action-packed live from the draft show at TD Garden, where we'll see if the owner gets booed again this year. I don't know.
We'll be listening. Make sure to check it out, Adam. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
So before we get to two glaring examples of when hosts don't listen from today's show, Jimmy alerted me to this audio before the show. I don't think either of you heard this yet. With both of you having worked at the Boston Herald, are you familiar with a Mike Shalen?
Of course.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Shales.
Okay. Well, apparently Mike Shalen thinks it's me who ruined David Price.
He's right.
He appeared on a podcast called Colin It Podcast, either way.
Welcome back into Colin It. As you may have heard last week, Colin It made an appearance on the ever-so-popular Felger and Maz program. Mike Shalen, who called in last week, was talking about David Price's disdain for the media, specifically one Jim Murray. And Jim joins us on the phone now. Jim, thank you so much for coming on.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
And thanks for getting the audio on as well. So I guess right off the bat, your response to it, do you believe that you and your colleagues at CSN and 98.5 actually have an effect, and how much of an effect on David Price's mental makeup?
I'd like to think that we don't, but I would be lying if I said that we didn't. I think it's now kind of obvious, considering, you know, Mike Shalen's been around the teams and covered the teams for as long as he has, and I don't think that he was just basically pulling that out of thin air. And having had a conversation with Dan Shaughnessy when he's filled in for the baseball reporters when Maz has been out, going back to last summer. At one point, he mentioned that he had mentioned the voice and like the fact that I do this stupid impersonation of David Price to David Price. And I was at the time, I was like, oh, God, like, because I don't know. Like, you know, you sit in the studio 4 or 5 hours a day, and really my mentality has always been, no matter what station I've ever worked at, is that nobody's really listening to you except for the people in that room. And that's obviously not the case, especially with the Sports Hub, because, you know, the ratings are really good and seems like a lot of people listen. So I don't know, maybe I'm fooling myself thinking that way, because I've always been of the impression that, you know, Price probably hasn't heard this, and if he has, like, he probably thinks it's stupid. But considering how he's talked about the media, and that he has, you know, he certainly has rabbit ears when he's on Twitter, and he's somewhat confrontational with fans and people on there, like, yeah, he definitely knows about it. There's no question that he has some sort of issue with the people at CSN or the show or with me, and it is what it is, man. Like, I'm just trying to make people laugh, so if he's upset by it, then so be it.
Do you think that this whole contentious relationship between him and the media and the fans is going to play into his decision of whether or not to opt out after next season?
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it sounds like, you know, based on any of these interviews that he's had, especially recently and after that whole meltdown in New York, like, yeah, he, you know, he certainly cares about his teammates. And I've said before on air, I'm sure the guy is an awesome teammate. Look at all the stuff that he does in terms of buying them, you know, Jordan cleats and, you know, hanging out, playing video games and whatnot. I'm sure he's great in that clubhouse. But, yeah, I think outside of being a good teammate, he hates it here. So, you know, whether it's the media is too tough on him or he just doesn't like a lot of things about Boston, like, I'm not going to be shocked if he opts out.
But his off-the-field issues aside, he pitched well Sunday night. The team actually playing very well right now. They just took 2 of 3 from the Houston Astros, who have the best record in baseball. Overall, Jim, this weekend for the Red Sox, resounding success, 10 out of 10?
Yeah, without question. And, you know, you see that, you know, water is finding its level with the Yankees, too, which I thought was going to end up happening. I thought that they were playing over their head. And I think, what, they lost? Did they get swept by the A's? Or they lost 3 or 4 to the A's? So, you know, they're at where I thought that they would be. I know that they're not, look, they're not the most exciting team in the world without David Ortiz. I think that's had an effect. But they're good. They're good enough. They're good enough to win the division or at least get in as the second wild card. So, no, it was a great weekend for them, and I still think they're going to be there at the end.
You had Rick Porcello crap the bed the other night against the Astros. Obviously, the production at third base hasn't been what you expect. What do you think the biggest need for the Red Sox is heading towards the trade deadline?
Well, look, I mean, it's depth in terms of that third base position more than anything else. I'd like to think that Porcello is going to be able to figure it out because it seems to be the same thing over and over with him over the last, what, like 7 starts, really? Like, he's leaving that fastball right over the middle of the plate. He's spotting teams 2 or 3 or 4 runs in the first inning for these last more than a handful of starts. Like, that, I'd like to think he can get that figured out, considering he was so dominant at home last year. He won the Cy Young. And while I didn't expect him to have that kind of year again, he should be better than he's been. And maybe it's a mechanics thing. Like I said, I think he can figure that out. So if they can add some depth at third base, I want to see it done, but I don't want to see Dave Dombrowski gut the farm system any further than he already has.
And you mentioned the depth at third base that could be affected by Dustin Pedroia's injury. Left the game last night, got hit by a pitch, got x-rayed. It seems like when he's at the top of that lineup, the guys around him just hit so much better. Mookie Betts has been on a tear since he returned from his last injury. Xander Bogaerts hitting over .330. If Pedroia's injury is a long-term issue, which we don't know if it will be yet, it doesn't seem like it will be, but if it is, how much more desperate do the Red Sox need to be to make a move in the infield?
Look, I don't think so, because he was out for a period before. I would just – look, I think they're still the best team in the division. And, you know, the Orioles have come back down to earth, and the Yankees, like I said, have been playing over their head. I don't want to see Dave Dombrowski do anything drastic, because that's where I think he starts to get himself in trouble. So I would try to ride it out if he's out for any kind of extended period.
Again, we're talking with Jim Murray of 98.5, the Sports Hub. It was about a month ago that we were all clamoring for John Farrell's head. Since then, the team has played exceptionally well. Are we past the fire Farrell period of this season?
You never know. all it takes is one dumb decision for people start, you know, wanting to clamor for his head again. So I think it's too early to tell. But look, considering all the injuries that they dealt with and all the turmoil and stuff like that with, you know, the price stuff, he's done a good job. And you know, I think he's just trying to play the hand that he's been dealt, especially when it comes to that bullpen, and he's done a hell of a job there. So, you know, look, it makes for good radio sometimes, and I know people, there's no real gray area when it comes to Farrell, so sometimes it's just going to come up anyway. But overall, like, you know, you bring up a good point. Considering the job he has done with the pieces he's had to deal with and the injuries and stuff like that, he shouldn't get canned this year, even if it really starts to go to hell.
So what are your impressions of what Dombrowski's done? So Farrell, obviously, this season has kind of overperformed compared to what we're used to seeing. Would you say Dombrowski's, you know, been mediocre at his job since he's been with the Red Sox?
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to steal a line from the producer of the show, Jimmy Stewart. He's Lyle Langley, the monorail guy from The Simpsons.
I love that reference, by the way.
Yeah, he's like a con man. Look, like, I know I'm being harsh, but really, like, if you think of his big moves – any dunce can do that. Like, anyone could have taken, you know, a pen to a check and gone to John Henry's big bank account and signed David Price, who was, you know, the key free agent that particular offseason a couple of years ago, and he was the prize of that offseason. He talked about adding front-end pitching. So that's what they were going to do. So anyone could have done that. And in terms of the trades, like trading for Chris Sale, like, anybody could have done that because, yeah, you're going to have to give up a lot from your farm system to get a Chris Sale. So again, anyone could have done that. You guys could have done that. Same for the trade for Craig Kimbrel. It doesn't take much balls. Like, you find an asset, you try to make the deal, you see what's tell these teams what's available. You had a very good farm system and some of the best prospects in baseball. Anyone could have made those deals. His other ones, like his mid-level deals and trying to get guys like, you know, the deal for Tyler Thornburg, that certainly has blown up in his face. Carson Smith has now had another setback in terms of his rehab. Like, I question his talent assessment when it comes to these mid-level tier guys. And I think, you know, I don't think I'm wrong in saying that outside of the slam dunk moves that anyone could have made, Every other move he's made is questionable, except for Chris Young. Like, okay, Chris Young paid off. But everything else, it's been a disaster.
One other guy I want to ask you about is Hanley Ramirez. It seems like the past couple weeks, the media has kind of caught up to the fact that he's kind of been underperforming this entire season. What do you make of this season for him? And do you think, I don't know, I've heard David Ortiz not being around has played an influence, him moving to become a designated hitter instead of playing first. Why has he been underperforming the way he has this season?
I wish that I knew. I think, like most people do, that David Ortiz probably had some kind of calming effect on him, or it was a respect issue, and that's why he was able to stay in line last year and play first base as well as he did. I don't know. He's got the mind of a child, and it's the same thing you saw with Manny Ramirez, who was infinitely more talented. And I could have put up with just about anything from Manny Ramirez because he was such a good hitter. Hanley, like, I don't know. Like, yeah, he had a good year last year, and he got really hot at the end of it, but I don't think the antics are worth dealing with in terms of his talent, because I don't think he's all that talented. He's a good hitter, but does he really live up to expectations overall in his career? Absolutely not. And now this latest thing that he pinched his neck because someone was like, hey, Hanley, and he turned around too quick, like that's just ridiculous.
So, and I think I know where you're going with this, but a move a lot of people didn't like in the offseason, I was one of the few on the bandwagon for it, was Mitch Moreland. If you had to pick one player for the Red Sox to move on from this offseason, Hanley or Mitch Moreland, and one for them to stick with long-term at that position, who would it be?
Mitch Moreland's just like the consummate professional. He ain't going to wow you. And there's always going to be that part of me with guys that are headaches like Andy Ramirez. You know, you have such a young nucleus here and guys you want to build around like Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi and Xander Bogaerts. Like, I worry that a pain in the ass guy can infect them, you know. So if you can move on from Hanley, that's something I can live with. Because, again, I just think outside of last year, he's underachieved and been a pain in the ass.
Again, we're talking with Jim Murray of 98.5, the Sports Hub, Felger and Maz. Going to have you put your prediction cap on here. Red Sox and Yankees now tied for first as of us recording this on Monday the 19th. The teams don't play again until July 14th, the first series after the All-Star break. Will that series have first place implications? Will these teams still be neck and neck at that point?
I feel like it. You know, it's, again, talking about the water reaching, you know, coming to its level with the Yankees, I think they're going to continue to, you know, as you've seen just recently, they're going to have issues with that starting rotation. So, but yeah, overall, I mean, that lineup and Aaron Judge is such a monster. So, yeah, I think that they still kind of will be within a couple of games of each other, and that will be an important series. And maybe there'll be some, hopefully some life in Yankees Red Sox, which there hasn't been for the last, handful of years.
And one more before we let you go, Jim. For those of you who don't know, don't listen to Felger and Maz. Jim Murray, an expert impressionist. We've mentioned the David Price impression. There's another great one he does, Carlton and Norwell, a common caller into the Felger and Maz show. So what I've always wanted to hear, Jim, and since I have you, I figured this was my chance. Just 10, 15 second conversation. What would it sound like between David Price and Carlton and Norwell?
Well, at first, I appreciate the kind words in terms of saying I'm an expert impressionist. That's a bit much, but thank you. Let's see. Oh boy. I haven't really been enjoying the Boston experience all that much.
Well, you're gonna have to get yourself in line and figure it out, because you have to have a thick skin to make it in this city.
Jim Murray from 98.5 The Sports Hub. You can follow him on Twitter at Big Jim Murray. Thank you so much for coming on and talking Sox with us.
Thanks, Alexis. Take care.
Call, and it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back into Callin' It. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz. Now, the NHL draft is on Friday, and we'll touch on that on our special draft special Friday afternoon. But the NHL expansion draft concludes Wednesday. That is when the Las Vegas Golden Knights will send in the list of players they will be taking. The list of players exposed and non-exposed came out yesterday. Craig Seiden of Snap Call Sports has been poring over that list, formulating his thoughts. He now joins us on the phone. Craig, how's it going?
Good, and yourself, Alex's.
Doing well. That seems to be popular. I think Jim Murray said that too.
He said that. See, Alex's. Yeah.
All right. Well, we got a nickname.
Well, you said in the last one that you weren't a fan of Alex Squared, which was what I was going to go with. So I figured I'd try to be a little more original.
You know what? It could be worse.
It could be.
All right.
I'll take it. It's a fine nickname. Nicknames.
So we had a couple trades in the NHL last week. Jonathan Drouin, probably the biggest name to move from the Tampa Bay Lightning, unless I blatantly missed something. We expected there to be some movement before these protected lists came out. So, Craig, How did these trades affect those players protected, not protected? Were these trades made with the expanded draft in mind, or was it just, you know, teams making moves?
Well, Montreal made two deals. They had the Drouin one, and then they had the Nathan Beaulieu one going to Buffalo for a third-round pick. That one, the Beaulieu one, was specifically because of the expansion draft. They did not want to lose Beaulieu for free, so they got a third-round pick back for Beaulieu. The Drouin one, it's been brewing for a while. I think they, with Tampa's depth, July 1, they have Andre Palat, Tyler Johnson, and Jonathan Drouin that they had to re-sign with not much cap space. So Drouin was the odd man out. They sent him out. Got Sergachev back, who's a young defenseman. He's going to be turning 19. So there's a lot of upside with him. And Steve Yzerman, coming out of the Red Wings organization, will let him develop until he's ready to come up. And you look at the young defensemen that have come through the Tampa Bay organization, one I will touch on later when we get into our expansion draft talk, he's going to be in good hands.
That's a big market tease right there from Craig.
Speaking of the expansion draft, given the talent that you see available this year, how big of an uphill battle will the Golden Knights be facing in their first season?
They will be facing an uphill battle, but it's not for them at the moment with George McPhee. They will be playing the long game. They're going to, with this whole next 48 hours until Wednesday when it's announced, they are going to try to accumulate as many draft picks as they want. I could see them potentially having 4 first-round draft picks this season if they play their cards right.
Wow, 4 picks. Danny Ainge somewhere needs to call a doctor. So, and that leads me into my next question. Sorry, we're all first-round picks here, trading first-round picks here today. That leads me into my next question, though. There's really two schools of thought here for the expansion draft. You try to get established, well-rounded players. You see if you can make a run at it right off the bat, build up that fan base. Or do you try to get players you can move, accumulate picks, like you said, and essentially go into a tank and build the thing yourself over a span of a couple of years? I think you just told us which way the Golden Knights would go. Which way do you think is the better process?
I think the better process is to build from within. I'm a firm believer in that, accumulating as many picks as you possibly can. I think a lot of what you will see is we already know a couple deals that are in place right now for the expansion draft that has been rumored. The Ducks had to expose Sammy Vatanen and Josh Manson. They do not have a first-round pick this year because they made it to the conference finals, and during that Patrick Eads trade, it was a conditional pick. So their pick now goes to Dallas, who will now have the number 3 pick in the draft, and then they'll have another first-round pick. So there's a little wiggle room with Dallas that something can be worked out. But maybe next year in the 2018 draft, you might see the Knights get a first-round pick. The Hawks, they want to get Marcus Kruger off their hands. He has a bad contract. He spent most of the year in the AHL. So though, if Vegas takes Marcus Kruger, the Hawks will send them Trevor Van Riemsdyk. The Jackets don't want to lose Jonas Korpisalo, Anderson, and Jack Johnson, is believed that they will send the 24th overall pick over to the Vegas Knights. And then the Isles, they protected 5 defensemen. So they did 8 skaters, 1 goalie. They ended up protecting 5 defensemen and only 3 forwards. That leaves Josh Bailey, Brock Nelson, Ryan Strome, and Calvin DeHaan all exposed. You wonder if the number 15 pick will be going somewhere to try to protect Nelson, Strome, Bailey, and even DeHaan, but that might be too much of an ask for just one pick, so you might see more picks going there for that.
Again, we're talking with Craig Seiden of Snap Call Sports. You just listed off a bunch of names for us, but I'm going to have you narrow it down here. Give me one player that you're surprised was exposed, the player that you're most surprised was exposed, and the player you're most surprised was protected.
The player that I was most surprised that was exposed would be Peter Mrazek from Detroit. Hot young goaltender, had a couple good years. You've seen a bit of a dip in his game. The Detroit Red Wings decided to protect Jimmy Howard instead. If I'm Vegas, I'm wondering, do I take Marc-Andre Fleury now, or do I take Peter Mrazek? You know, there's a lot of working parts there that with 2 quality goaltenders. The thing about is believed that they'll take Fleury, but with Fleury's playoff history and his a little bit of inconsistent play in the regular season, you know, it's going to be a big decision for George McPhee. On the players that were exposed, it would have to be James Neal. Now, Nashville with David Poile had a big decision to make whether they can make a deal to try to protect both Cal Yarncroc and James Neal, or they had to protect one or the other. They went with the younger talent and Cal Yarncroc, who had a great playoffs for them this year, so they protected him. If I'm George McPhee, I'm taking James Neal, I'm playing him first line minutes, and I'm moving him at the deadline to acquire more draft picks and assets.
So you just touched on a couple goalies. Obviously, we're not going to list off, you know, all 30 whatever players the Golden Knights are going to take, but, you know, like the quarterback in football, the goalie is going to be an impact. Which two goalies do you see heading out to Vegas?
So I actually think they're going to take more than one goalie. I could see them taking 3, 4, or 5 because it's such a coveted position that they can take them, keep them as assets, and move them before free agency or during free agency to a team that needs them. Backup-wise, I see them taking Carter Hutton, Antti Raanta, and Philip Grubauer. Two of those three will go to Vegas. For the starters, it will either be Marc-Andre Fleury or Peter Mrazek.
So
given there that one of those will be the back, one of those will be the starter.
So given the fact that we haven't seen an expansion draft in the NHL since what 2000, how do you expect this to kind of change the NHL? How is this going to affect the NHL as a whole, big picture?
I think it's going to be great for them. They're the first ones into the market in Vegas. It's another big market team that people want to go see. One for out there, you go to Vegas, where you have just some of the shows, which are fantastic. They have the casinos, and now you have a sporting event that you can also go to. I think that's a great thing for him. It kind of also evens out the conferences as it stands right now. There's 16 teams in the Eastern Conference and 14 in the West, but with Vegas coming in, that brings 15. And I think you'll either see another relocation or another expansion in the near future to either Quebec City, Seattle, you know, one of those two, I think will be a hot market for the NHL to go into.
So is this a sign that the NHL is growing in popularity, or is this simply just an effort to grow the sport?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, Vegas had to pay $500 million, $500 million just to enter the league. So one, it shows the stability of the sport and the growth of the sport and popularity, at least in the United States. This past Stanley Cup was some of the games were some of the most watched games since the early 2000s, before the lockout era of 2004, 2005, and then the shortened one a couple of years ago. So the NHL is storming back. They have a lot of great young talent. You know, we're getting out of the dead puck era with the likes of Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, you know, just to name a few of the big guns, and more coming each and every year. And the hockey is becoming more palatable and more exciting with each year.
Craig Seiden of Snap Call Sports, thanks very much for coming on. The NHL expansion draft, which I've realized talking to you, it's not really a draft. It's an expedited free agency, sort of. That will conclude Wednesday. Then the NHL draft starts on Friday. We will have coverage of that with our Friday draft special. Craig, again, thank you so much for breaking it all down.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Call, and it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back into the Call in the Podcast. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz with you live from our studios in Wesley, Massachusetts. Fourth and final segment. We're going to try something new here, Alex. I know we record these on Monday afternoons, not the ideal time for people to be online. We're going to try periscoping this, though, and see if we can get some people to weigh in on our discussions here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to interact with the audience.
So if you have any questions, put them down in that chat box below. If you're listening to this later, if we're referencing Periscope, sorry you missed it. Let's start with an opening thought, though, while people come in here. And we'll start with the NBA draft. Obviously, Boston area podcast, a lot going on this weekend with the Boston Celtics. Looks like they'll be trading out of the number one spot. Your thoughts on everything that went down this weekend?
I think the trade's fine. One thing's evident. They don't think that Markelle Fultz is the guy. And Danny Ainge figured, why not get something in return for that number one pick since they have all the leverage? But to me, that's the problem. I think they had all the leverage and they left something on the table. I feel like Danny Ainge is the type of guy who can probably finagle a little bit more from a team like the 76ers, given how many assets they have. And he didn't. Still, not a bad trade if they're not too high on Markel Fultz. And I think that's the main takeaway that should be the main takeaway for most Celtics fans.
So I'm just going to start us here with the U.S. Open real quick, because I was fascinated by that all weekend. Mm-hmm. We're living in the post-Tiger world here. The last seven major winners have all been first-time major winners, with Brooks Koepka winning this weekend. It was close towards the end. At one point, you had like a 12-way tie for first place, and that was late Saturday. I'm loving golf post Tiger. I wanted Rory to finally, not Rory. I wanted Ricky Fowler to finally pull his out. Unfortunately, yeah. I didn't get that this weekend. I'm a big Ricky guy, but after all the complaining by all these players, all week leading up to it, that the U.S. Open isn't fair. They don't keep the course right. This, that, whatever. It ended up being a very easy course. Mm-hmm. You had guys setting records, U.S. Open records. I thought it was great. Golf, I think a lot of people watch this weekend. I heard the ratings are really good, so looking forward to the next one, but it should be I think we're in a strong year for golf. We had a great Masters, great U.S. Open, and this could be 2 years in a row now where all the major winners are first-time winners. It hadn't happened until last year. Before last year, last time it happened was 2003.
Yeah.
So I like those odds. Again, if you guys want to talk about anything regarding the first overall pick in the NBA draft, you want to talk about the U.S. Open, you want to talk about the upcoming NHL draft, let us know on Periscope. Just a reminder, everybody listening to the podcast, we'll be doing another show on Friday. Mm-hmm. We'll break down the NBA draft. We'll get into the NHL draft a little bit. I see some of the Snap Call regulars joining, so shout out to you guys. Again, this is the Call in the Podcast brought to you by Snap Call Sports. So I guess until we get a question here, Alex, let's talk about this first overall pick.
Yep.
Cause we disagree a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I am very much against this trade. Now, look, when it sounded like they were getting the Lakers and the Kings unprotected picks from Philly, I was all about it. Then all of a sudden it's one pick. Then it's one pick protected. I think, and what does rule of thumb mean? But the general rule of thumb is that, for every spot you move down from number one, you should get that many picks. So to move down two spots, you should get two future picks plus, you know, the three. Danny Ainge gets one pick. It's semi-heavily protected. It's from a team that could be good next year. Obviously not going to be a great team, but a team that I would not be surprised if they went 500. I think Danny got fleeced. I think Danny got dannied. His supposed strength is that he can drain every little bit out of a trade, and it doesn't seem like he did that here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you to an extent. He could have gotten more. I think that's evident. Again, they had all the leverage. Probably could have gotten something else out of the 76ers. He didn't. I still don't mind the return. I think that what you need to really keep in perspective is that Markel Fultz has probably been hyped. There's guys in the Celtics camp who weren't very impressed with him. I think Danny Ainge was one of them. Obviously, he had to have been. And they didn't think he was worth taking him number one overall. If that's the case, then you trade that pick. And even if it's only for one another pick for next year, that's still another asset you have without really giving up, in your mind, anything too big. So I don't mind it. They could have gotten more, but I don't mind it. The thing I am worried about, though,
yep,
is, you know, the one weakness of Danny Ainge, you know, the one gripe against him during his entire executive career is that he's not the best evaluator of talent. What if he's wrong? What if Markel Fultz is the guy? What if he goes with Josh Jackson, he just doesn't pan out the way that people think he will? And I do think that his evaluating talent, I think it's overblown. I think he's decent at it. But still, it's in the back of my mind. He could be wrong. It's a huge risk. No one trades the first overall pick usually because it's a huge risk and it can tarnish one's legacy.
And we've got our first comment on Periscope at Drewski Lorenzo on Twitter saying that if the Celtics trade the number one overall pick for Butler, he's going to be pissed. They could have made that trade last year. Drew, I agree. First of all, thanks for the comment. I agree 100%. I don't want Jimmy Butler. I don't want Paul George on a one-year deal. I don't even know if I want Kristaps Porzingis. And this actually leads me great to my next point. Here's why I wanted as many assets as possible. It took seven players, granted not all superstars, but it took seven players to get Kevin Garnett from the Minnesota Timberwolves. If the trade had gone through as originally intended, the Celtics would have had seven first-round picks in the next 3 years. And so this gets into the next point, the minimum-level player. And, I mean, this sounds really minimum. And granted, look, if they can give up Tyler Zeller for Jimmy Butler, that's their minimum. But with all these picks, you put them all together, don't pick for the next 3 years, and you go get Anthony Davis. That has to be it at this point. I said when the Pelicans traded for Cousins, what it seemed to me was that they were making Davis expendable, in that overall you're going to have a better unit as a team with Cousins plus the Davis return than just Anthony Davis being able to get Cousins for so cheap.
Isn't that the same with the Celtics, though? Wouldn't they be better off with four potentially top five picks?
But they already have all these other pieces. They have Isaiah Thomas in place. They have Avery Bradley in place. They have Al Horford. Mm-hmm. The Pelicans don't have those supporting pieces. Look, Alvin Gentry's on his last year down there in New Orleans. The GM is as well. They just signed one-year extensions, kind of make this work now. Mm-hmm. If those guys are gone, I would think new ownership would want to win with their guys as opposed to Anthony Davis. You wait a year because, let's face it, you're not doing anything this year anyway. Mm-hmm. And then you go, you trade all. And that's why, and I said this to you off the air, and you looked at me a little crazy, but I stand by it. I would rather have both unprotected, the Lakers pick and the Sacramento pick, and just tell Philly, keep the third. Pick twice in the top three. We don't care. Mm-hmm. Give us the future picks. Wait the year. Let New Orleans clean house. And then you send it all there. All seven first-round picks there, or eight first-round picks, six of which have the very real potential of being top five for Anthony Davis. And then you're looking at a starting five of Thomas, either Bradley or Smart, Jaylen Brown, hopefully he makes his strides, or you bring in another free agent at this point. Maybe then you go get Jimmy Butler, then you go get Gordon Hayward, Al Horford at the four where he should be playing in Anthony Davis. That team, in 2 or 3 years when LeBron's out west, and him and the Warriors are beating up on each other in the conference finals, that team's going to have a chance to do something.
But in 2 or 3 years, Isaiah Thomas is 30 years old. Al Horford is 33, 34. Avery Bradley is, 28, 29.
How old were Garnett, Allen, and Pierce?
But Garnett, Allen, and Pierce were better than those three, you have to say. Maybe not Anthony Davis.
Yeah,
but
Anthony Davis.
I think you can't be, even the next 3 years, you're not going to beat the Warriors. Don't try to win next year. Don't try to win the year after that even. Build. You look at a team like the Thunder. They picked Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden within a 3-year stretch. Obviously, they hit on all those guys, and most teams won't do that. Even the Golden State Warriors, though, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. I look at all these top teams, the teams that sustain success in the NBA, they do it through the draft. And the reality is, you're not going to surpass the Golden State Warriors within the next 3 or 4 years. Build for 5 years from now, not within the next 3 years.
Well, then even still, wouldn't you rather have the extra pick? And I'm not saying this like, and again,
but they still do because they're getting that first round pick this year, first round pick next year. It's still the same amount of picks.
If you have any comments or questions, feel free to put them down in the chat box below. You're watching the or listening to the Callin' It podcast on Periscope. We're also on iTunes and SoundCloud. Check us out. Follow us on Twitter. If you want to ask anything, NBA draft, we'll talk US Open too. We have another one here. Throughout the NHL, who is the best player left unprotected for Vegas takes? So, Drew, I hope you listen to the full show. When we post it later this afternoon, we talked about that earlier. Cam Ward's really unprotected. Holy crap.
Yeah, and that means they're going to get him. Every year, right. I feel like you look back to the last expansion draft, both those teams, they stocked up on goalies, and Craig said it when we interviewed, and you should listen to the whole episode because great interview with Craig. Teams will stockpile goalies if they're in the expansion draft simply because they're great
assets.
It's going
to be a total roster churn, which is going to be interesting. The other player I want to throw out, I'm surprised James Neal is left unprotected. Mm-hmm. It's common in these situations for teams to work out trades. For instance, there's certain guys Nashville had to protect because of no trade clauses, whatever, but they could say, hey, you know what? You leave James Neal alone. We couldn't protect. We had to protect this guy, but we'll send him to you anyway. If you leave James Neal alone, I think it could be one of those situations, but it's going to be an interesting roster churn over the next couple of days. If you have any more questions, comments, put them down below. Again, we're talking just about, we'll talk whatever here on a Monday morning. Mm-hmm. We'll stay on this for another couple of minutes before we close the show out. The one point I want to make, getting back to basketball, and you said, yeah, get future assets, build forward, etc. then why don't you want the extra pick? And I'm not trying to be immature as saying, oh, get as much as you can. Like, I understand that, that both sides have to agree to the trade. I understand you have to live in a realm of reality. I'm not trying to be a green teamer. I genuinely believe that the Celtics could have gotten both of those picks if they really finagled it right. If you throw in a player, a Jay Crowder, maybe a Tyler Zeller, maybe Philly wants the expiring contract. At some point, Philly's going to have to pay Embiid, have to pay Simmons, have to pay Fultz. And I know this is a couple years down the line. They're not going to necessarily be able to afford those guys that they pick.
Yeah,
I think if you put it in that context and you throw another player and they can use, they need point guards. You have an excess of point guards. Throw Terry Rozier in there. It is not outside of the realm of reality to believe the Celtics could have gotten both of those future picks as well as the three. But, and that's what's going to stick with me.
I mean, so you're saying on top of this year's first round pick or not including that?
See, I'd be fine without it, but I think it's very possible that the return could have been
all three of those picks.
All three of those picks?
You
have to throw in a little more than just the one, but I have no problem with that.
I think that's a lot to ask for that number one pick, especially when you're moving down two spots in a draft that's super deep. I wouldn't have been all right if they didn't get anything this year in this draft. I would have been heated. That would be a horrible move for the Celtics, in my opinion, because again, this is a really deep draft.
But see, I would have been okay. What is and it obviously we're in Boston. It all goes back to this guy. But what's Belichick's famous line? It's not about one of his many famous lines.
Yes.
It's not about collecting talent. It's about building a team. This is a very good draft, but it's all point guards and athletic slashing forwards. That's the entire Celtics roster right now. Now, look, if the draft was all big men, if it was all rebounders, rim protectors, and guys who could shoot threes, yeah, I'd be livid if they traded out of it. But they have the guys in this draft.
But
they already
think,
have that.
But there's, I think that the guys available in this draft have a higher ceiling than who's on your roster right now, maybe with the exception of Jaylen Brown.
But then could you move? So then I go to, and this brings back to my last point. You get the three pick, you get both next year picks, and let's say you're going to take a Josh Jackson at three. Doesn't that make Jaylen Brown expendable? Doesn't that make Jay Crowder expendable?
Jay Crowder is expendable. Jay Crowder won't be on this team in another year or two.
Let's say they're going to take, and I mean, this isn't something people are talking about, but let's say they take De'Aaron Fox at three. Because they've been planning on taking a point guard with Fultz. Let's say they take De'Aaron Fox at three. Doesn't it make all their point guards expendable? You know who you're going to take at three. You move one of those guys, and then you can get both picks. I'm kind of – what bothers me is it seems like Danny only wanted to trade the one. I think he could have packaged it and gotten more.
Yeah. And again, I think it just goes back to the fact that he's not super high on Markelle Fultz. I don't think he was super I don't think he really cared all that much about getting a mega return, a Brooklyn Nets
type
return.
Is Fultz your number one guy right now?
I'm not a draft expert. I think any future number one pick is hype, though.
We've talked about this on the show before.
They went 9-22. That is a criticism. That's a legitimate criticism. I hate when people just poo-poo it and put it off to the side. It's like, he's only one guy on this crappy roster. That's not the way it works. They lost to Yale. Like, his number
one... There goes the Mike Felger argument.
He did, but it's true. They lost to Yale, an Ivy League team that they should stuff in a locker. Like, and especially when you have one of the best players in the country. Like, if he's that good, you've got to think that he can carry a team to win, to have double-digit win season.
We're going to wrap it up soon, so if you have any more questions or comments, NBA draft or other, feel free to put them down below. One comment on that, it all comes down to Danny Ainge's drafting ability. I've been high on Josh Jackson since December. I also like Lonzo Ball, and we're not going to get into the discussion right now, but I think we can both agree, if the Celtics come out of nowhere and take Lonzo at three, oh my God.
He won't. Lonzo Ball denied the workout with the Celtics. I think he's off the board. Lonzo Ball, I think there's a realistic chance he falls out of the top five.
I 100% agree with that. And we'll talk more about it Friday. Somebody wishing they would have kept the pick. Look, I totally see that argument. I said trade it from the minute they won the lottery. I was one of these people saying I kind of hope they get three or four so it's not as complicated for them. I totally
I'm glad
see
they
the
got one because they got another pick out of
that's
it.
That's true. But I didn't trust Danny to trade it. That's why that was my take. You know what? If I am totally sympathetic to the – I wish they would have kept the pick people today. I totally am. Last year I wouldn't have been. That draft wasn't as good. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with that argument. It's a totally fair argument. One other right now before we wrap this up, we got somebody saying which brand should sponsor Brooks Koepka. He is sponsored by he's
Nike. Guy.
He is Nike. Yeah. It was the first Nike major in, I think, 9 majors, which is the longest draft for them. So learn your facts. The person actually texting that in, not commenting on Periscope like they should be. We'll go with like a 10-second clock right here while I wrap up the show if you can't get it in. I want to thank Adam Jones, Jim Murray, Craig Seiden for talking a variety of topics with us today on the show. Everybody who asked their questions watched on Periscope. We'll try to do a couple more of these. Maybe we'll do one Friday when there's some less people in work. We'll see how the schedule goes then. Again, we will have a show on Friday. We will break down the NBA draft. We will preview the NHL draft. I don't want to tease any guests just yet because I don't have anything official, but we're expecting a good group.
Yep.
So make sure to check that out on Friday. If you need the reminder, subscribe on iTunes. Follow us on SoundCloud. Follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. I think we're out of questions. Oh, we got one more. This was one of the best U.S. Opens in a while. I said at the beginning of the show, you had a massive tie on Saturday. Koepka tore away. The course wasn't a mess. I personally rather watch a golf tournament where everybody shoots 14 under as opposed to 10 over.
And
there's
parity. It's not like you had the same guys up top, and that's something we already
talked about. 7 first-time majors winners in a row. All right, so on that note, we're going to wrap up the show. You can get at us on Twitter, at Alexander Lebowitz, correct?
Alex_Lebowitz
on Twitter, at TheRealAlexB. Follow the show as well. So until Friday, he's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. This has been Calling It, brought to you by Snap Call Sports. We'll talk to you on Friday.
You've been listening to Calling It. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call, the game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.